The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. For you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Words which I am sure you know well. Perhaps no more famous words in all the Bible. Even John 3:16 doesn't quite get the play out there amongst the non-Christian world that the words of Psalm 23 do. And they are beautiful. They are wonderful words. Although sometimes I was forced to wonder as a parish pastor if perhaps we weren't at times hiding from the truth, hiding from the darkness of the valley of the shadow of death by holding these words up, as if the promise were one that would say to us, we are no longer there. I wondered if we realized who this Lord is, this Lord who is the shepherd. And as always, how much more we would feel what these words mean if we had their context. If we remember that this is not first the prayer of you and me, but it is first the prayer of Jesus, and that it is being first the prayer of Jesus, his prayer prophesied, spoken by his forefather, David. And it would seem that the context of this prayer as David spoke, it is one we've talked about recently here. It was that rebellion of Absalom, when his own son, his own flesh and blood, decided that he was done having his father be on the throne, and he stirred up mutiny, and he drove David as an old man with quite a number of people from Jerusalem in such a way, with such defiling manner, so as to blaspheme, to reject the Lord's anointed Christ, to pillage his household, to defile his family. The book of 2 Samuel tells us that the people were weeping as they watched David go by, as he fled. They didn't know what was going to become of them, what kind of tyrant had taken over. And there were a number of priests who attempted to go with him. They wanted to take the Ark of the Covenant with them as they fled. And David said, no, 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 go back. He's not going to kill you. Stay and minister with the Ark of the Covenant according to the covenant with which we know we have the forgiveness of our Lord. And as David says it, if the Lord still looks on me with favor, he will bring me back. Isn't it amazing for David to have such faith? He had it when he stood and faced Goliath, not having the promises to be king yet, just simply having the promise of being a circumcised man of Israel for whom God would fight. He endured Saul's persecutions, where he did have the promise to be king, trusting that God would make good on that promise and bring the kingdom into his hand in God's good time. And now he acknowledges, if the Lord is done with me, whatever he does is just. I'm a sinner. I don't deserve anything. I will wait on his mercy. And the Lord does bring his Christ back to his mountain city, back to his Ark of the Covenant, back to his throne, as again a picture of our Lord Jesus Christ and his everlasting kingdom. But there's another little event that takes place after these priests go back. They are spies for David. They try to discourage the counsel of Absalom and give him bad counsel, basically. And then they let David know what's going to happen. And so they send a message to David that he should cross the river, pass over the water and escape because Absalom was going to come out and catch him right where he was. And after they do this, David then comes to a place called Mahanaim. And Absalom crosses the Jordan River with all the men of Israel, and he sets Amasa over the head of the army of Joab, and they're preparing to go after David to try to find out where he is. But when he comes to Mahanaim, Shobi, the son of Nahash from Rabbah of the Ammonites, who aren't Hebrews, by the way, and Machir, the son of Amiel from Lodebar, and Barzillai, the Gileadite, and Ragalim, names that you don't need to remember. Remember what they did. They brought to David and the whole host of people that were with him. He had a small military band. He had some royalty with him, nobility and whatnot. There's quite a few people. They bring out beds, basins, earthen vessels, wheat, barley, flour, parched grain, beans and lentils, honey and curds, and sheep and cheese from the herd for David and the people with him to eat. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You've anointed my head with oil. I'm the Christ. I'm the King. My cup overflows. Why? Because the Lord is my shepherd. David, in the midst of one of the most great atrocities of his entire life, I mean, how would you handle it if in an evening your entire livelihood were taken away from you, your house, your home, by your own blood, and you were chased on pain of life, right? With the sword, out across fields, through a medieval land, helpless. How would you feel? Would you give up? Would you stop trusting? Would you say, God, why'd you do this to me? I'm sure David had those thoughts in his heart as well, even as he pens these words in which he is preaching to himself as much as he is preaching to you. That the God who makes promises doesn't go back on his promises. And that he actually made David lie down in green pastures, but he was keeping him safe. And when it says it leads beside still waters, you know that means in safety, in pacificity, without danger, so that, and this is so key when we say these words of verse 4, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, because we do. That's where we live now. The darkness of this present age, where the devil prowls around like a roaring lion seeking someone to devour, where the wolf has it in him to go and pillage, to take for himself the life, the souls of the sheep. Even though that's where we live by our own wandering, all like sheep having gone astray, we have nothing to fear. We have nothing to fear even in the midst of evil. The evil is not more powerful than the God who protects us with his rod and staff, who leads us through this present age, now revealed in all its clarity through the death and resurrection of Jesus, who is the shepherd, who lays down his life for the sheep, who does not run when he sees the wolf, but lets the wolf sink his teeth into his heel that he might crush his head. David sat there and he ate that food and he thought, man, who am I to doubt? My Lord prepares the table that I need. And you, Christian, as you go to the Lord's Supper this weekend, you got something even better. In the midst of this valley of the shadow of death and our great, true, mutinous enemy, the devil, seeking our end, God continues to bring out bread and wine, which are so much more than bread and wine, in order to feed you immortality. The Lord is your shepherd. And even though by virtue of your mutinous flesh, you will want many things between now and the day that you die, you also have the promise that you shall never want. Because in Jesus, God has provided everything that you will ever need.